Welcome to REI Marketing Secrets, the podcast where we dive deep into the world of real estate investor marketing. Your host is Trevor Oldham, founder of Podcasting You, and each week we bring you exclusive interviews with successful real estate investors who have mastered the art of marketing their real estate businesses. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting out in the real estate industry, this podcast is your gateway to unlocking the secrets behind effective real estate investor marketing. Get ready to elevate your marketing game and take your business to new heights.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the REI Marketing Secrets podcast. Today on the show, we have Sam Wilson. Sam is the founder and CEO of the Bricken Investment Group. He's been an active investor for more than a decade in self-storage, parking, multifamily apartments, single-family homes, RV resorts, and laundry facilities. Sam also has a diverse background in business ownership and management, allowing him to participate in a variety of asset classes. His current focus is presenting nationwide investment opportunities for personal and investor portfolios. Sam, super excited to have you on the show today.
Hey, Trevor, thanks for having me, man. I certainly appreciate it.
And Sam, for our audience out there who might not know of you, we went through all the different sort of asset classes when introducing you. Is there a specific asset class that you're focusing on right now, or are you still in that multifamily, the RV, the laundromat? Just curious what that looks like.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think every asset has its own particular time when it makes sense. And depending on what your strategy is, that I guess that's up to you to determine. So that said, I love what we're doing in the laundry space right now. It makes sense to me. And that is where our sole focus is. And it's just buying, acquiring, renovating, and owning laundromats for the long term. I mean, it's one of those things that's a cash flowing, inflation resistant, recession resistant business. I don't know where we're going economically. I don't really care, to be honest with you, because we have a business that serves a basic human need, which is clean clothing. And so going long in that just makes sense to us right now.
And for the laundromats that you're purchasing, are they in your local area? Are you going nationwide? What does that look like?
Yeah, this is a very hands-on business. So it's something that you start in your backyard and then you expand out from there, which is exactly what we're doing. So we have purchased everything that is on market and or off market that we can get our hands on within the greater Memphis area. And other stores will come up over time. But then expanding beyond that, heading east across the state of Tennessee is where we are right now. We've got project in Jackson, Tennessee, which is about an hour from here. And then we're planting a flag in Middle Tennessee right now, which is great. So we've got our first store live there in Middle Tennessee right now, which is about 3.5 hours away. But yeah, it is something that we are scaling across really the state of Tennessee at present.
Yeah, that's awesome. So it sounds like in your state, but also going out a couple hours north, south, east, west, not going like Tennessee to California. But with these laundromats that you're purchasing, and I think of multifamily where maybe it's a heavy value add, when you're coming in and purchasing these laundromats, how are you improving the current laundromat? Are you making it? Is the technology becoming better? Are you offering additional services? What does that look like?
Great question. Yeah, across the board. I mean, you're buying stores that are generally legacy owned. And by that, I mean 10, 20, 25, 30 year ownership of a store. And I'm 42 right now. And so when I'm 67 and you look at me and say, hey, Sam, do you want to retool your stores and run these for another 25 years? My answer is going to be no, I don't. And that's the same thing that these sellers are running into. They're owner operators. Generally, they own one, two stores tops. They don't want to invest the capital or the energy into retooling them. So yeah, we go by retool. I mean, we do full gut rehabs. Your value in these stores lies in the infrastructure, the plumbing, the water heaters, the HVAC systems, all your mechanicals, all that stuff. If it's laid out properly, and that can be a really expensive undertaking to do, and even in a shell, that can be an expensive undertaking to take on. So you're buying basically that when you're buying these stores, and just the fact that they've been a fixture in the neighborhoods for however long. And then we go in and do a full rehab, and it's going to include brand new equipment. It's going to include new payment systems. It's going to include no more quarters. For those of you who know the term coin laundry, that is something we are very, very, I don't know the right word I'm looking for here, but adamantly getting rid of, which is quarters in laundromats. It makes no sense in today's day and age to take quarters. It's both costly. It's time consuming. You're emptying machines. They get jammed. They get stuck. And to be honest, I mean, the cost of doing laundry is just going up. Some of our machines can be $11, $12, $13 to start for some of your really big equipment. And what's that, 48 quarters? Like, who wants to put 48 quarters in a machine? So payment systems is another big area that we're improving across the board. I mean, we've had stores we've bought that didn't even have a phone line, like, that far back, where it's like, can you call the store? No. Like, okay, we can solve that. We can at least get a phone line in there. So, yeah, a lot of different things that we do, but there's about a 10-step process that we go through start to finish to make sure we bring these stores up to 2024 standards.
I think of it almost like when I'm looking at like self-storage units. There's so many mom-and-pop operators within that space where no technology. I know when I was moving out of my apartment into a house, there was about a two-month gap there and had to put a lot of stuff in storage. You know, there's really no technology. There's more you call them, they tell you which unit, send them a check by mail. There was no sort of automation. It seems like it's similar to that in the laundromat space where it's, you get these few operators, or I wouldn't call them operators, your few mom and pop, maybe they own one or two of these facilities, maybe they own one or two laundromats, and they don't bump up prices, they don't adapt with the time. So it definitely seems like there's great opportunities in the laundromat space. And I really like it just from a cash flow play going forward when you're looking at the investment where, yeah, you're coming in and potentially your value add, but it's not so much, I feel like, as a big of an overhaul as it is coming in and renovating 250 units of a multifamily complex. You got to bump up the rent. Maybe you're going from $1,500 a month to $1,550 to $1,600. People move out. Maybe you have to evict people, however that may be, where I feel like when it comes to laundry, if you're bumping it up, say a dollar, two, three, four, that's not going to affect someone as much as a nice $600-$700 a year increase on the multifamily side. But let's say someone's listening to this podcast and they're like, Sam, this sounds great, interested in investing in laundromats. How do you find those investors? You know, is it going out there on podcast? Is it guesting? Is it having your own podcast? Just curious what that aspect looks like when you do find these deals. I need to bring on some additional investor capital to continue to fund these deals.
Yeah, so we've had a pretty good investor base for several years now, raising capital across a lot of different asset classes. And so that's probably the first thing we do. Yes, having my own podcast helps. Coming on podcasts like yours is also very helpful because everybody has their own kind of unique listener base, which I think is helpful. So that's really primarily it. And just staying in front of people with a newsletter. We did a weekly newsletter over the last 3 years, I think it's been. And just this year, we're actually moving that to a monthly newsletter, just because of some strategic things that we're doing on that front. I just said, man, we're going to slow down that communication from, it's not even a communication, it's just a warm keeping touch with people across the board. And our newsletter was actually really well read. I think what was our response, our open rate was like 60%, which is really high for a newsletter. I think 10% is good for most people that are sending out email newsletters. So one of the things we did on that front that was really helpful is just keeping it real. We just kind of tell people, there's called edutainment. There's the education component piece where we're actually giving value, things to think about. Here's what we're doing. Here's what we're seeing. Here's mistakes we've made. But at the same time, also giving just kind of some personal insight without being too personal. Because I think some newsletters you wind up reading, you're like, yeah, I really don't care about how deep the snow was on your ski trip, but thanks. So, you know, just trying to find that balance and keeping it authentic, I think, has been something that's been really helpful. So all of those channels are active ways that we probably engage with our investor base right now.
That's awesome. And definitely a 60% open rate. That's pretty phenomenal. It shows that you're doing something right. But now you have the people there, let's say, subscribe to this monthly newsletter. They're listening to the show. They're hearing you on another podcast, even your own podcast. They're interested in working with your company. What does that process look like? Are you having that investor call? And then once you're having that investor call, what does that sort of process look like? Are you talking to anyone from someone that says, hey, I heard the Sam on this podcast, he's this laundromat guy, I want to go talk to him, to your more institutional or maybe your family office investor that has, say, $5-10 million to invest with you? How does that sort of look like from prospective investor basis? Is it when it comes to having a potential call with your company?
It's super easy. You can book calls right on our website. That is pretty mindless. There's a scheduling link. You'll get lots of opportunities to schedule a call directly with me, which is way we have it structured right now. At some point in the future, there may be an investor relations person, but I kind of like having those phone calls with investors. So that's part of the business I hang on to. I hire out a lot of the other day-to-day management operations. All those things are run by other team members, but I do still enjoy talking to investors. So you get lots of opportunities there at BrickitInvestmentGroup.com. You start working your way through the material, downloading our downloads, the stuff about the fund, the spreadsheets, all that stuff, and you'll get lots of opportunities to schedule a call.
Yeah, that's awesome that you're still doing the investor relations aspect of it. Not too many companies I've come across it is nice to speak to the person that's directly putting these deals together and finding these investors. That's definitely great to hear. Let's say someone, they have, I don't know, say 25K in the bank, and your minimum investment, and don't quote me on this, but let's say your minimum investment is 50K, and maybe they need 6 months, maybe 12 months to ramp up, but they're like, yes, this is exactly what I want to do. How do you manage that communication ongoing with that investor? Is it just sending them touch points like that monthly newsletter? How does that aspect look like when it comes to just staying in contact with those investors they want to invest, but maybe they just don't have the money quite right now?
Yeah, that's it, man. I mean, the monthly newsletter, it is reading that, staying open. I mean, that's where we send out deal updates. That is where you just kind of get the lowdown on what it is that we're working on and why. And from that point forward, it's something that if there is a present opportunity to invest, that's a place where you'll see it. So it's easy enough to figure that out. Also, Trevor, I'm pretty old school. Before long, you'll have my cell phone number. 99% prefer people just pick up the phone and call me. Don't text me. Don't email me. Just call. And I'll answer the phone. I don't mind that one little bit. So that's another thing that it's just the way I operate. So those are things that you'll see via the newsletters and whatnot. But again, you'll find my phone number pretty easily. And that's also an easy way to get a hold of me and find out what's going on.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's definitely having that direct line of communication. I know I spend so many times talking to potential sponsors where I have follow-up questions. Maybe I'm talking to the investor relations person and they take a week or two to get back with me. Or sometimes right. It's even take like, and we're talking like simple questions. Maybe if it's more of a complex question, at least acknowledge me. And it's crazy to me because if I'm investing 50K in a deal and you're already taking a week or two to get back to me, and that's not even me giving me my money yet, what's my expectation going to be once I do invest with you? Am I going to hear from you after a month if I have a question or something like that? So it's nice to know that you have that direct line of communication with you. But with that said, once someone has invested in one of your deals, how often does the reporting come through? Is it monthly reporting? Is it quarterly reporting? And what does that look like from a performance standpoint? Is it going over the new upgrades? Is it going over the new facility? You know, what does that sort of look like from someone that's pulled the trigger, they've invested in your deal, just a communication standpoint?
Yeah, same story. It's still a monthly investor update. So you'll get that every month. Try to get it out in the first week of the month so that you can see kind of what we've done the previous 30 days. Your financials will come out quarterly, so expect that. Every 90 days, you'll get your financials from the previous quarter. But basically, yeah, you're going to be end of quarter. So you'll get financials 1st of February for the last quarter of 2023. So that's kind of the way we handle communications on that front.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's great to know for someone that's really interested in investing with their company. But from a financial standpoint, what does it look like when someone invests in laundromat? Is it like a 7, 8% pref? Is it 10 to 14% IRR? Is it monthly distributions, quarterly? Is it more value-added where maybe it might take a year to get those distributions? Or is each deal or fund that you put together a little bit different than the other one?
Yeah, I mean, so for the exact fund-specific splits and things like that, I just encourage you to go to our website, download the PPM. You can read through all that stuff. You can call me as well. And we can talk through some of the details on kind of how our current fund is set up. One of the things to know about laundry in general, and especially anything that's heavy value add, which I'm going to put this in the heavy value add category because we're buying stores that are kind of dog assets. I mean, that's the whole premise. Go in and find something that is poorly run, poorly managed, in terrible condition, buy it. And the store I'm sitting in right now, case in point, I mean, the thing was, he hadn't upgraded anything in 25 years. I liked the previous owners, nice enough guy, but he was tired. He's 74. He didn't want to do anything with it. So these stores take time to turn around. Like, it's not like, oh, hey, look, we just put $800,000 into this store and then tomorrow it's performing at peak operating capacity. That's not the way this works. It takes 9 to 12 months to get a store to where it is then operating in the black every month, which is, it's just kind of part of the plan. So you got to know going in eyes wide open that, hey, we're going to buy this. We're going to renovate it. We're going to put a whole ton of money into it. And then it's going to take a little while to get this business plan implemented. So, and I have faith in that. I've seen it now many times over where it just takes that kind of slow moving train beginning where the beginning you just see it's creeping like, oh my gosh, what's going on with this? But then by the time it gets to actually moving, you're like, wow, that's really going. So in the store I'm sitting in now, we bought 1 year and 14 days ago and we're right on track. So yeah, it's fun to see that happen.
That's great. I think it's typical of any multifamily deal where you're going in, you just have to know what the notion where it's going to take typically a year. I know right now I'm in a self-storage deal that I invested in last February. the expected first distribution was 18 months out from there. So now I'm a year out, you know, no distribution. But because of that, the goal is to get like a 2.5 equity multiple in about 5 years, give or take. So where I get no distribution in the front end, I get that heavy appreciation on the back end because it is more of a development deal, where some of the other deals where I'm invested in like a triple net lease deal where it's your corporate grade tenant, the rents are already in place. The expectation with that is you're going to get that monthly cash flow just because that's how that deal is set up. It sounds like your deal's more set up, or some of the deals are more set up on that value add where it might take a little longer. And I think to each their own, some people really like getting the cash flow, but some people really like, for me, where I'm younger, I'd rather get some of that more appreciation in that equity play where I could put that money to work further down the road, where if someone, like say that investor that, or the person that you bought the store from, they're 74, maybe now's not the time to invest in a heavy value ideal. It might be more of a cash flow play for them. But Sam, it's been talking to you.
Yep. Yeah, let me clarify on that. These are cash flowing businesses. That's the reason we're into this. Yes, it's value add, but the objective is not a massive equity multiple in 8 years. It is to clip the coupon. That's the life of our fund, is 8 years. But it's to clip the coupon as soon as we possibly can and just keep that cash flow, because that's the whole reason I'm buying this. The whole premise behind it is for the cash flow investor. So especially in a potential recession, highly inflation, I mean, we're about as inflation resistant as a gas station, where it's like, all right, well, sorry, the price of oil went up. Guess we got to change prices, which I can do from my phone for any of our stores in about 30 seconds. Not that we do it that often, because your customers would be like, wait, this is really, really hard to keep track of. But that is, we are buying these strictly for the cash flow play.
Perfect. Yeah, that's excellent to know. Sort of a different take than how I was thinking about it, more on the appreciation side. But no, that's great to know. But Sam, last question of the day. If our audience is interested in investing with you, learning more about you, where can they go? Where can they find you?
Trevor, well, first off, I wouldn't invest with any guy that has a hat on that looks like mine does right now. So maybe if that's you watching this and you're like, oh my gosh, who's this vagrant wearing a hat? It is freezing cold here in Memphis. It's like almost single digits, and Memphis does not do cold. I'll just say that first of all. So I have no hair. So yes, I'm wearing a hat on this because I couldn't possibly imagine sitting here talking to you freezing for 45 minutes. But that said, if you still want to get a hold of us after seeing me in this hat I'm wearing, which looks ridiculous, I would go to BrickEninvestmentGroup.com. That's BRICKEN investmentgroup.com. You'll find way more information there probably than you want. And again, you can download all the information on the fund. You can schedule a call with me, all of those things. So that's the best place to do it.
Awesome. I'll make sure that gets included in the show notes of today's episode. And Sam, thank you again so much for coming on to the show.
Absolutely. Thank you, Trevor. Appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning in to the REI Marketing Secrets Podcast. Be sure to head on over to our website to check out the episode's full show notes. We'd love it if you would leave a review for us on iTunes. If you're interested in using podcast guesting to grow your real estate business, head over to podcastingyou.com. That's podcastingyou.com. We've helped over 400 real estate professionals secure more than 6,500 interviews. They're a podcasting booking agency that helps real estate investors appear on top-rated podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe to REI Marketing Secrets Podcast and join us every week as we bring you invaluable insights from the brightest minds in the real estate investment industry. Let's uncover the marketing secrets together.